in the Holy War. And we have come down now, according to my notations, to that section, paragraph that begins, "After some time." This is now, this is not, what I'm fixing to tell you is not in Bunyan's notes or side margins or anything, but I have written in the side margin of my copy, this is the second council to be held. The first council was begun in that paragraph shortly before that says, "Now after sermon they got together and consulted what was best to be done." That was the first council or consultation that man's soul has taken to ascertain, try to ascertain what to do about the fact that Emmanuel has vacated the premises and is no longer, they are no longer enjoying his presence. The second of those, the first you remember, was to send a message. They sent a message, and of course the message was sent back, unheard, back to man's soul. So they take now a second council together. After some time, when they had somewhat refrained themselves, they came together to consult again. This is the second consultation. What by them was yet to be done. And they asked advice, as they did before, of that Reverend Mr. Godly Fear, who told them that there was no way better than to do as they had done. Nor would he that they should be discouraged at all with that they had met with at the court. Yea, though several of their petitions should be answered with naught but silence or rebuke. "For," said he, "it is the way of the wise Shaddai to make men wait and to exercise patience. And it should be the way of them in want to be willing to stay his leisure." Now, boy, I'll tell you what. I thought of when I read that again. I don't even know how many times I've read the Holy War. Several. But when I read it again in preparation to this class, this lecture, that phrase jumped out at me again, to stay his leisure. We are absolutely in a generation of evangelicals that have no notion of that concept. No notion of the concept of us as his creatures sitting at his feet, awaiting him. We have created in the minds of the modern evangelical a God who is literally on demand, at our beck and call, would not, could not, and dared not to keep us waiting. That is the prevailing conception of the God that we have. That is not the conception of God as Mr. Bunyan understood him. He uses from the lips of this character, Mr. Godly Fear, this means to a worthy word of counsel to every believer. That is wise for us to maintain that which we have been given as instruction, as duty, as the means of grace. We are to attend the means. It is at his disposal to do with it as he will and when he will. And we are all together to wait his leisure. That is a tremendous phrase, stay his leisure. That's a wonderful, there's a world of theology embodied in those three simple words, stay his leisure. I was reading sometimes in the morning at the jail, just waiting for process and everything to go back. I'll sometimes skim through and try to reread some things that I've written in my Bible over the years. And I have a little excerpt that I had cut and pasted in the back of my Bible, goodness gracious, I don't know, 20 years ago maybe, many, many years ago. And it's copied out of Thomas Manton, volume 21, page 312. Thomas Manton said this. He said, I cannot say to everyone that ploweth infallibly that he shall have a good crop, but this I can say to him. It is God's use to bless the diligent and provident. I cannot say to everyone that desired posterity, marry and you shall have children. I cannot say infallibly to him that goeth forth to battle for his country's good that he shall have victory and success. I can say as Joab, be of good courage and behave yourselves valiantly. I cannot say infallibly, you shall have grace. But I can say to everyone, let him use the means, leave the success of his labor and his own salvation to the will and good pleasure of God. You use the means. That's your responsibility. Salvation is in his hands. And then Manton says, let us do what God hath commanded, and let God do what he will. That's good counsel. And that is exactly the counsel that godly fear is giving to this wretched man's soul. You need to stay with it. You need to keep praying. You need to keep sending messengers. You need to keep interceding. And you're just going to have to stay his leisure. Then they took courage and sent again and again and again and again. Murder said prayer at all times necessary, becomes peculiarly seasonable when a state of backsliding is discovered. Prayer may not immediately receive an answer, nor forfeited comfort return. But as godly fear said, there is no better way than to pray and pray and pray again and wait on the Lord's pleasure. So they pray, and again and again and again and again. For there was not now one day nor an hour that went over man's soul's head wherein a man might not have met upon the road one or other riding post sounding the horn from man's soul to the court of Shaddai. And all with letters of petitionary in behalf of for the prince's return to man's soul. The road, I say, was now full of messengers, going and returning and meeting one another, some from the court, some from man's soul, and this was the work of the miserable town of man's soul all that long, sharp, that cold, tedious winter. indeed. Long, sharp, cold, tedious. Why? Because they have become comfortable in their profession, and took for granted the Lord, and sat down at the table of Mr. Carnal Security. The note of our commentator, verse number 200, page number 217 in our book, says, "This stern and unflinching advisor, Mr. Godly Fear, this stern and unflinching advisor of the soul, seems to discharge the same office as the erring Christian as evangelist is said to have done to the pilgrim, as described in the Pilgrim's Progress. When Christian had yielded to the ill advice of the tempter and had been led astray to the rugged sides of Sinai, instead of speeding the direct way to the wicket gate, then it was that evangelist met him and, quote, coming up to him with a severe and dreadful countenance, began to reason with him," end of quote. And his reasonings were harsh, severe, and threatening. Yet after the admonitions, he directed the erring pilgrim into the way again and gave him the kiss of peace and smiled upon him and bade him Godspeed in his journey. And so now, Godly Fear is at first the stern censor of the soul, his voice rebuking the spirit of carnal security and urging the soul to put it utterly away and out of existence. And yet, by and by, he becomes the calm advisor of man's soul's good, encouraging the soul in prayer, urging it to continue its supplications at the throne of grace, and pointing out what are the ways of God in his dealings and discipline with his erring children. A long-suffering God who beareth long, but doth at last hear and heed and grant the request of persistent, patient prayer. So they took courage. They took courage. And then they carried on with the petitions. Our commentary and others that I will share with you could not resist, of course, commenting on Mr. Bunyan's description of this period of time in the life of man's soul as being long and sharp, cold and tedious. The commentator says this former phase of the soul's state, as described at the conclusion of the preceding paragraph, was of a happy summer, all joy and blessedness. But now it's not so. It's the soul's wintertime. This dreary and desolate season of spiritual decline is said to have been long. Winter is sometimes a prolonged period of desolation. And so the soul's spiritual winter is at times made to be long and weary. My soul is sore vexed. Psalms 6, verse 3. My soul is sore vexed, but thou, O Lord, how long? How long wilt thou forget me, O Lord? Forever? How long wilt thou hide thy face from me? Psalm 13, 1. So it's described as long. It's also called sharp. The loss of evidence is a severe loss, and God will have the soul to feel it. This sharp, pinching sense of loss and loneliness, like the biting frost of midwinter, drying, parching, withering, blighting, all that the summertime has developed and brought forth. Isaiah 44:11, all our pleasant things are laid waste. It's sharp. And then it's said to be cold. Yes, cold in every way, because all warmth had gone, and a piercing east wind prevailed. The fountains of love were sealed, and the streams restrained. man's soul basks not in the warm sunshine of God's countenance. Her heart is cold, her love is cold, all was chill in the ice of a dead wintertime. And finally, it's called by Bunyan, tedious. All such alterations from high privilege to withdrawal of our pleasant things are sure to be unenjoyable and therefore tedious. Long are the days of sorrow and tedious the nights of pain. Such is the probation and discipline of the soul, and this may yet continue for many days. It is the season of the hiding of the face of Jesus, the withdrawing of His Spirit, when the soul is without cheer or comfort because it's without Christ. Dark and dreary indeed are all such seasons to the soul. Wherefore, let him that thinketh he stand take heed, lest he fall. Sharp.
Sharp.
And tedious. In Chaplin's book, Compilation of Writings of Bunyan and Other Places, I thought it would be worthy for you to hear some other comments, some other preaching by John Bunyan on this subject, the subject of the soul's winter or backsliding. Mr. Bunyan, speaking of the backslider, said, "None knows the things that haunt the black backslider's mind. His new sins are all turned into talking devils and threatening devils and roaring devils within him. Besides, he doubts of the truth of his first conversion. Consequently, he has it lying upon him as a strong suspicion that there was nothing of truth in all of his first experience." And this also adds lead to his heels, adds lead to his heels and makes him come as to sense and feeling more heavily and with greater difficulty to God. As the faithfulness of other men kills him, he cannot see an honest, humble, holy, faithful servant of God, but he is pierced and wounded at his heart. "I," says he within himself, "that man fears God. That man hath faithfully followed God. That man, like the elect angels, hath kept his first place. But I am fallen from my station like a devil. That man honoreth God, edifieth the saints, convinceth the world, condemneth them, and become heir of the righteousness by faith. But I've dishonored God, and stumbled, and grieved saints, and made the world blaspheme, and halt. For all I know, I may have been the cause of the damnation of many. These are the things, I say, together with many more of the same kind, that come to the mind of the backslider. Yea, they will come with him, yea, and they will stare him in the face, will tell him of his baseness and laugh him to scorn all the way that he's coming to God by Christ. I know what I say, and this makes his coming to God by Christ hard and difficult to him. Shame covereth his face all the way that he comes. He doth not know what to do. The God that he is returning to is the God that he has slighted, the God before whom he has preferred the vilest lusts. And he knows God knows it and has before him all his ways. And he knows God knows it. That's the most painful part. The man that has been a backslider and is returning to God can tell strange stories, and yet such as are very true. No man was in the whale's belly and came out again alive, but backsliding and returning Jonah Consequently, no man could tell how he was there, what he felt there, what he saw there, and what workings of the heart he had when he was there so well as he. In other words, it's only the man that's been there that can tell you how very sharp and long and cold and tedious this is. The returning again of the backslider, says Bunyan, gives a second testimony to the truth of man's state being by nature miserable. Of the vanity of this world and of the severity of the law, the certainty of death, and the terribleness of judgment to come. His first coming to God by Christ told them so, but his second coming tells them so with a double confirmation of the truth. It is so, saith his first coming. It is so, saith his first coming. But in his second, oh, it is so. The backsliding of a Christian comes through the overmuch persuading of Satan and lust that the man was mistaken and that there was no such horror in the things from which he fled, nor so much good in the things to which he hasted. Turn again, fool, says the devil. Turn again to thy former course. I wonder what frenzy it was that drove thee to thy heels and that made thee leave so much good behind thee, as other men find in their lusts and their pleasures. As for the law and death and imagination of the day of judgment, they're but mere scarecrows set up by polite heads to keep the ignorant in subjection. Well, says the backslider, I will go back again and see. So, fool, he goes back and has all things ready to entertain him. His conscience sleeps, the world smiles, the flesh is sweet, carnal company compliments him, and all that can be got is presented to this backslider to accommodate him. But behold, he doth again begin to see his own nakedness, and he perceives that the law is whetting his axe. As for the world, he perceives it as a bubble. He also smells the smell of brimstone, for God hath scattered it upon his tabernacle and begins to burn within him. Oh, saith he, I'm deluded. I am ensnared. My first sight of things was true. I see it again now. And now he begins to be for flying again to his first refuge. O God, saith he, I'm undone. I've turned from thy truth to lies. I've believed them for such at first and find them such at last. Have mercy upon me, O God. This, I say, is a testimony, a second testimony, by the same man. Well, certainly Bunyan knew it. We have known it, each and every one of us. Long, sharp, cold, and tedious, such is the life of the backslider. It doesn't require any comment, I don't think. However, any who would like to are welcome to make comment on that subject of backsliding. In the first conversion, in the first repentance, man sees all of the horror of his own sin. But in the return of the backslider, he has again a clear view of all of that, but now, adds to that the pain of one other new and seemingly more vile sin than all of those, because now he comes confessing to have sinned against grace. And that is more painful than all. In our version of the Holy War, that is the one from which we are studying, that is the break in a chapter. Chapter 10 begins with these words. Now, if you have not forgot, you may yet remember that I told you before that after Emmanuel had taken man's soul, yea, and after he had new modeled the town, there remained in several lurking places of the corporation many of the old diabolians that either came with the tyrant when he invaded and took the town, or that had there, by reason of unlawful mixtures, their birth and breeding and bringing up. In other words, innate depravity. And their holes, dens, and lurking places were under or about the wall of the town. Some of their names are Lord Fornication, Lord Adultery, Lord Murder, Lord Anger, Lord Lasciviousness, Lord Deceit, the Lord Evil Eye, and Lord Blasphemy, and that horrible villain, the old and dangerous Lord Covetousness. Now these are some, says Bunyan, that came in with Diabolus when he came. And some of these were already in the city, born there, because of the mixed birth within the city. And again, that's Bunyan's description of the innate depravity. By the way, that word lasciviousness, I wanted especially for the children, that word is in our New Testament, in our King James Version of the Bible, and it's a wonderful word. It simply means to indulge animal desires, to allow yourself to indulge, to allow yourself to engage the most base and animal desires. Lord lasciviousness. I just wanted to point out that definition, especially for the children, so that you know that. So these are all present in the town. These, Bunyan says, these, as I told you, with many more, had yet their abode in the town of man's soul, and that after that Emmanuel had driven their prince, Diabolus, out of the castle. Against these the good prince did grant a commission to the Lord will be will, you remember, and others, yea, to the whole town of man's soul, to seek, take, secure, and destroy any or all that they could lay hands on, for that they were Diabolians by nature, enemies to the prince, and those that sought to ruin the blessed town of man's soul. But the town of man's soul did not pursue this warrant, but neglected to look after, to apprehend, to secure, and to destroy these Diabolians. Wherefore, what do these villains but by degrees take courage to put forth their heads and to show themselves to the inhabitants of the town? Yea, and as I was told, some of the men of the town grew too familiar with some of them, to the sorrow of the corporation, as you will yet hear more of in time and place. So now Bunyan introduces us, while this constant intercession is going on he turns the light, as it were, and is looking in the precincts of man's soul, and looking at all these wretched diabolians that yet remain in the place. Says our commentary, the offspring of man's soul is now manifold. Many of the better principles have been wedded to those of the baser sort. The result is that evil is propagated, sins multiplied. The works of the flesh, Galatians 5:19, abound, while the fruits of the spirits, Galatians 5:22, are diminished and brought low. Thus, within the soul, sins are found in family groups. Some older, some younger, some larger, some smaller, some parents, some offspring. There is a parentage and pedigree of sin, and a strong family likeness pervading all the members. There is a heraldry of sin, with its dark family discussion, crossed with many a bar of spiritual bastardry. Sin is the aged parent of the past, stretching her protracted age even to the present, and still prolific of a deadly prodigy. When lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin, and sin, when it's finished, bringeth forth death, says the Scripture. This lineal continuity, I like that, this lineal continuity is not yet exhausted in the soul. It breeds its offspring still. This has been the great danger of the soul from the first day of its transgression, even until now. Accordingly, we have found that one of the strictest and most oft-repeated charges to the soul has been that the diabolians should be utterly destroyed. Their continuance in the soul is but the prolific seed of future mischief, lurking for a season in the soil, waiting for time, circumstance, opportunity to develop their growth and increase. To this charge, the soul does not give sufficient heed. It trifles with its safety and ere long loses its evidence. This phase of the spiritual experience answers to that of the pilgrim when he slept while he ought not, lost the roll of his parchment, the evidence of his adoption, and with difficulty recovered it. It is a dark day for the soul when the lurking power of Satan revives and meditates evil in the soul's health and peace. The uncertainty of the renewed man after trifling with divine grace is Satan's chosen opportunity when he comes forth more boldly than before, seduces the soul into sin, and reduces it to a deeper bondage day by day. This is the soul's probation. It had received command to destroy the diabolians, but they are not destroyed. They live, and live for mischief. When the soul dallies with temptation, reposing on the lap of its spiritual Delilah, it fails to fight the good fight of faith. All carnal things revive and grow, while the things of the Spirit decline and die. Now listen. Final paragraph, listen. And this probation may continue long. A single act of unfaithfulness may bring forth years of sorrow. Boy, I wish I could tell you that's just not true. I wish I could tell you that this author is just seriously confused. I wish I could tell you there's nothing in that. But I fear I must testify the truth. That is a quote worthy to be put in everyone's Bible, on everyone's desk, in everyone's mind. A single act of unfaithfulness may bring forth years of sorrow. Such is the experience of many a Christian man who has trifled with his old enemy, sin. How many weary steps had the pilgrim to retrace ere he recovered his lost parchment? How many days, weary days, were spent in seeking back to the path of pilgrimage from Doubting Castle? How many years of distress and anguish did Bunyan himself endure while bereft of light and joy and comfort? This is ever the chosen time of Satan's temptation. When Christ has departed from the soul, so the Diabolians once more take heart and meditate the recapture of the whole man. This is a dangerous time. This is an exceedingly dangerous time. The time when the soul has been abandoned of the Lord, given over to its desires. What a dangerous time. I cannot overemphasize it. A single act of unfaithfulness may bring forth years of sorrow. Lord, help us. How many, many, many acts of unfaithfulness have we indulged? How many years of sorrow may it produce? We'll stop there today. Is there any question or comment on this section?